Our Fear the Walking Dead finale recap is sponsored by TrueCar. When you're looking to buy a car, you want to make sure you're getting real pricing on actual inventory. And a lot of times, that's not the case when you configure a car online, because later on, you find out that that car is not available or the price that you thought you were getting wasn't real. But TrueCar gives you real pricing on actual inventory. And this isn't just pricing that's offered by TrueCar. It's pricing that's offered by the dealer. And not just any dealer, a TrueCar certified dealer. A carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. And they're not going to go back on the deal, on the parlay like the autos do. No, they will not. Because with TrueCar, you'll easily find the car that you want. With TrueCar, you see what other people in your area pay for the same car you're looking for. Now you know what a fair price is and you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. And there's over 13,000 TrueCar Certified Dealers nationwide. You'll work directly with your own TrueCar certified dealer contact, and TrueCar users are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. And best of all, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off of MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Fear the Walking Dead season finale is over, mid-season finale, that is, but we are just getting started here on the Fear the Walking Dead post-show recap, and now here are the two guys who like their coffee light with just a little spoon of anthrax. I'm Rob Cisterna here with Alex Kidwell. Alex, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I thought we had whiskey with our coffee. That's preferable to anthrax.
But, you know, not a fatal dose for Nick. Of course, Fear the Walking Dead spoilers are ahead from the mid-season finale. And so we're going to be talking about all that and taking some of your questions here live this morning as we stand here heading into the Fear the Walking Dead mid-season break. Alex Kidwell, how are you doing this morning?
Doing pretty good. Still a little early for me, but yeah, I'm happy to be doing this. This is exciting. We're talking a little Fear the Walking Dead live on video. This is a little bit of a change of pace for us.
A little bit of a change up. Let's see how it goes. And if it works out, we could do more of this stuff in the future. We are on the new look post-show recaps Facebook page. We did a major rebranding over the weekend and tried to match all of everything going up on post-show recap more up with what I'm doing on Rob Has a Podcast. So hopefully you guys give that a shot or check it out on postshowrecaps.com. And here we are on the Facebook page. We're trying everything, all new stuff. We're like are we like the autos? Are we like Madison trying new things on?
Yeah, well, it's not the autos. They seem no. Well, it's not Jeremiah. No. Pretty set in his ways, that guy.
He's set in his ways, but here we are, back to our roots. I guess sort of like Jeremiah going back to drinking again. We are back to our roots, doing live TV recaps.
Yeah, or I guess Jake. Jake tried some new stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. Sure, we'll go with that. Anyway, so you could post your questions and we could take them here during the show. And of course, all this week we have our Road to Westeros podcast getting you set for Game of Thrones Season 7. We should have one episode a week, all week long. Myself and Josh Wigler getting ready for the Game of Thrones Season 7 premiere coming up this Sunday night when Stephen Fishback and I will be bringing you Game of Thrones Snow It Alls. Every Sunday night, and Josh is very busy with what he's doing for the Hollywood Reporter on Sunday night, so he'll join us for our feedback show, and I'll be with Stephen Fishback live on Sunday nights, just like this, assuming it works out. All right, so that's all at postshowrecaps.com/iTunes to subscribe. Alex, so we did our death draft last week on this, and I think that the number one pick was the Jeremiah Otto, correct?
Incorrect.
Oh, well, who was the number one pick?
Listen, you took Jake and you left me Jeremiah.
Ah.
Aha.
Okay. Appreciate it. I thought I had him once he was getting scalped.
Oh, yeah. That looked like a pretty done deal. Who starts a scalping and stops partway through? Come on.
I mean, it did seem as though that was like a, like, you know, no joke in terms of an incision that was being made.
Yeah, he's got like a solid lobotomy scar forever now, it looks like. It's not great.
He just shook that off, ripped some dirt in it. Okay, so some major headlines from the mid-season finale. Of course, we had Ophelia back in the mix, and she was with Walker. She was Walker's girlfriend now.
Yeah. That was one of like the obscure things I had to go back and listen to make sure I called that correctly. But somehow, you know, like a broken clock is right twice a day, Rob. Somehow I thought like maybe there's a chance Ophelia's with these new people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, antagonized against Jeremiah. And yeah, sure enough, I mean, she really, really hated the people at the ranch.
And of course, the biggest headline of the night, Jeremiah Otto is no longer with us, Alex. Are you sad to see Unser, Jeremiah Otto off the show?
Yeah, I liked Dayton Cali. I thought he was fun. I mean, obviously, I think like he represented like the old guard. Like they can't move forward with him, so he kind of had to go. But it was a shame because I really liked the actor and I really liked you know, the role he was playing. Are you gonna kill me, Madison? That's great.
Yeah, and also I thought that he was great, and I thought that I think that he was one of the things that made this half season pretty fun for us to cover. So we'll talk about what's going to happen in the fallout of Jeremiah Otto. But we also found out about this Madison backstory of that. This was a pretty a big development that Madison killed her father.
Yeah, right. And I guess now we know why we never met Grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Yeah. Well, now, in terms of the mythology of Madison Clark, do we believe that Madison killed Nick's father?
Ooh.
Nick and Alicia's dad. Because we had that backstory came up last season of I forget if he was a junkie or if he was an alcoholic, but he had some substance abuse issue and he was depressed. And it seemed like that there was some, lack of clarity around the
some
circumstances,
kind of underlying things.
Right? Yeah. I think Madison said, "Oh, did you hear? Dad died in a car crash," and something like that. And it seemed as though that there was some mysterious circumstances around his disappearance. Do you think is Madison like this Black Widow figure, where she ends up, killing all of these father figures and people that she's in a relationship with?
Yeah, right. Watch out for, make sure there's no rabbits on the stove. This is crazy. Yeah, I don't know. That's not something I would have considered. I hadn't really thought of that. But now that you say it, it's on the table, right? Like that's something that could be something they choose to drop on us later as like a big bombshell. I mean, this was something that Alicia and Nick have known Madison a lot longer than we have. And this was news to them as well. So these are the kind of bombs you could drop as like a character, a reshaping moment for a character. And I mean, we've seen Madison kind of delve deeper and deeper into, willingness to do what's necessary territory this season. But man, I think that really exemplifies like, okay, even before the world went to hell, like this is someone who was willing to sacrifice, the looks, as she talks about, sacrifice her own personal, the way people look at her and the way people view her own respect in the world for the safety of those she cares about. So there's precedent.
Now, did you buy this backstory from Madison? Because I do feel like the show has sort of evolved this character from where she was at the beginning of this series as a, just a lowly guidance counselor. While she did have a tendency to be a badass, were you buying that she was a killer before this show even started?
Yeah, buy it. Sure. I mean, what reason she got to lie to Alicia and Nick, first of all?
But Travis didn't know.
Well, Travis didn't know, but I think that was kind of an interesting element about Madison. If you go back to season one, right, as she is the guidance counselor and she's able to provide a lot of advice, but we don't get a lot of details about her herself, but she is, like you said, she has a tendency to be a badass. There's that kid who has, he's like watching those zombie videos on his tablet or whatever. And she helps him escape the you know, she beats down the principal zombie, takes care of business when she has to, and she doesn't have any, like, you know. So, I mean, there is something within Madison, clearly, that is like she can pull it out of her when she needs to.
Now, in terms of just how this all plays out for Madison, she ends up sort of conspiring, at least, and she maybe didn't was not privy to what Troy was going to do last week when he took out that caravan. But she did cover up the crime, and she did make this big impassioned plea to get everybody from the Teotihuacan camp to go out there and commit this all-out assault on the Walker compound. And by the end of the episode, she completely flips around, does a 180, sympathizes with them, and brings them literally the head of Jeremiah Otto.
Yeah, although, I mean, to me, I didn't read it as sympathy. I read it as like, without Jeremiah Otto, the two groups can coexist. Mm-hmm. That was like the only obstacle standing in the way from moving forward. And that's the thing about Madison, right? Her interest is in moving forward at this location. It's not necessarily about protecting anyone besides her kids. It's about making sure her and her kids are safe at this ranch. And in getting rid of Jeremiah, now the ranch is safe. I mean, I think the agreement, as I understand it going forward, is that if they share the water and share the resources, that they're not going to be bothered at the ranch now that Jeremiah's like blood debt is paid.
Did you think it was an interesting pivot, though, that she went from, okay, all out war, we need to kill all these people, to, okay, well, if they just want Jeremiah Otto, let's just kill him and then go to peace with them?
It is an interesting pivot, but I feel like also, you know, she meets, what's his name, Taka, for the first time, and she actually understands that Taka slash Walker is someone maybe we can talk to, maybe can be reasoned with. He's not like a lunatic the way maybe we would have framed him before we actually met the character or understood him beyond just piling up bodies and pieces of fill or whatever. And then, yeah, I think also the fact that Ophelia is in there. I mean, obviously, she, you know, her and Ophelia are not seeing eye to eye right now, but they know Ophelia from before. I mean, if Ophelia can vouch for Walker, there is something to that because they know Ophelia is not insane.
Yeah. I don't know about Ophelia not being insane, but we can talk about that.
Militia,
but let's get into where we go from here because, okay, now Jeremiah Otto is gone. Troy and Jake are left to pick up the pieces, and Nick was the person who ultimately pulled the trigger on Jeremiah. So how did Troy and Jake ultimately handle this moving forward?
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. And I think a big piece, a shoe that will eventually drop is Troy will learn who shot his dad, I think. I think that has to come out in the wash eventually. Troy and Nick seem to be increasingly, you know, getting along now. But that to me is something that's like the one thing that'll eventually happen that'll kind of, you know, someone will tug at the thread and unravel the whole sweater. Right. Like, I think that as it stands right now, it's fine. You know, Jake is not the kind of guy who's going to, you know, fly off the handle. Troy is. But Troy is, you know, as we discussed in last week's episode, Troy is kind of indebted to Madison on a level that he can't repay now. And he, I think, you know, especially now with Jeremiah gone, I see it may be Jake and Troy that are, you know, de facto leaders. But I see Madison running the camp now. But, you know, I mean, I think they're going to default to her when it comes to a lot of the decisions that need to be made at this point.
But how are they going to explain to Troy and Jake where Jeremiah is? Like, I understood where Madison came in and said, like, no, you're going to kill yourself. That's how we're going to make this work. Going to make it look like a suicide. This didn't look like a suicide, Alex.
I mean, I guess she sold it well enough. She, you know, took the gun out of Nick's hand right away and dropped it over, like, under his hand. And they don't have forensics or anything. So I guess she did it as best she could. Like, she made it look like it could have been. And then she was sitting there, like, looking wistfully. Like
he doesn't have
there.
A head anymore.
Yeah, but didn't she, like, well, I think she waited till after they buried him and then dug him up and took his head, right? Or, like, they did something. Because they had put his body on a truck and driven him off, right?
Yeah.
And then afterwards, she goes to, like, get the head. So I feel like maybe that's done on the down low. Like, her and Walker know about that. And Walker's trailer has a new, thing to look at in there in the relics department. Mm-hmm. But Yeah. I don't know if Jake and Troy are aware of the head removal.
Now, with the head removal, it's too bad they couldn't have gotten it like that head that was in the bunker where all the church group goes to go smoke weed.
You were thinking that too. I had the same thought.
Yeah, that would have been good if they opened the bowling ball bag and it's like, ah.
Yeah, I mean, if Walker cares about, you know, relics and honoring the past and air, like, what better way than to, like, keep them still animated?
Yeah. Can you answer this to me? Why did Jeremiah Otto kill Walker's relatives and then bury them in houses and that people were living in? Why did he do that?
I guess it's just that adobe. Like, that, you know, the adobe is like, it was a sacred spot. That's where the founding fathers made their pact. That was there before the ranch was built. So like, I guess that, you know, that was like the site of the act, right? Like, this is where we, the four of us made a deal in blood that we were going to take this land, you know, and just, you know, whatever happens, we were just going to do it. So, I mean, I think that's kind of, that's their secret spot. And that's why he comes there to get wasted. You know, now it makes a lot more sense. And now why he's firing at that spot on the floor, that's his smoking gun down there. Like, that's where literally the bodies are buried.
Okay. All right. Seems like a weird thing to do, but I guess, you know, that the people that I've killed, like, you know, I just want to be as far away from that evidence as possible. I don't want to bury it in my house or anything like that.
Yeah, but then maybe the authorities find it. Like, you don't want to turn on the news one day and have and see, like, the local news where, like, people are digging, like, somewhere in the woods not too far. At least when you have it close by under your own floor, you know, no one's getting to it.
Yeah. All right. But where do you think we go with Jake and Troy? Jake, obviously, involved in the romance with Alicia. Troy, the loose cannon now, can be more underneath Madison's wing. Do you see them being at odds with each other, or do you think they'd be on the same page moving forward?
I think Madison is going to need to hold them together. I mean, I think it seems like their respect, their mutual respect and adoration for their dad was a big piece of what held them together, even though their dad wasn't good to Troy. Troy was still, you know, clearly appreciative of his dad. I mean, he was very upset when he saw his dad had killed himself. So I think Madison is, you know, at least for the short term, I think Madison is going to need to be the glue that really, like, keeps everyone together and keeps everyone strong, because you know, Jake, it's funny because, you know, Otto even said, like, you know, my one son is, you know, he's weak or whatever. My other one's a chip off the old block. I hate them both.
Yeah. So,
that's, you know, I mean, they each have their flaws. And I think, yeah, Madison is going to need to, like, pull them together so that they draw from each other's strengths, because they are kind of opposites in many ways.
How do they explain to the Otto boys why they're not at war anymore with the Walker group?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think maybe, yeah, and maybe that speaks to...
I guess those guys were just bluffing.
Maybe that speaks to that they'll...
All talk, no action.
They'll know or do know about the head. Maybe that speaks to your point about that. But yeah, I mean, I think Jake is, you know, Jake at least is very practical. Jake would probably be okay with that. I don't know about Troy. Troy's an emotional guy. I think Troy maybe would rather go to war than sacrifice the, you know, than desecrate the corpse. I can see that.
So do you feel like that we have potentially seen the last of Walker's group? Or do you feel like that we're done with this?
I don't think so. I feel like now it's kind of a symbiotic relationship where, like, we've got a solid truce now with Jeremiah gone.
It's like Alexandria and the kingdom.
Yes. Well, not quite. I mean, it's a little more tentative, I think, than that. But okay. I mean, they're not going anywhere. They're right down the road. Well, Black Hat Motel is still there.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the big return from tonight's or last night's 2-hour episode. Ophelia ends up being back in the fold. She ends up being a romantic interest of Walker, and then a whole big plot was hatched where they were going. Well, first we had the parlay. Alex, what do you think about the parlay?
I mean, not great. It almost ended in scalping. That's never good.
It was not great. Yeah, the part. There was so much talk about, like, hey, we had a parlay. We had a parlay here.
Yeah, it's like I was watching Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, and Ophelia ultimately, she ends up being the person to go back to the Otto camp. She ends up being seemingly kicked out by Walker and dropped off on a motorcycle, but she's really, they just need to get her behind enemy lines. Did you feel like you were watching Turn, Alex?
Yeah, kind of. Did you buy that for a second, Rob?
I did. I didn't see that there was a swerve coming there, but she was there just to poison the Night's Watch here with anthrax.
Oh, yeah. Dirty pool, misters. That's not fair fighting there, man.
Not cool, Ophelia.
Not cool.
Not cool. And then we find out that she didn't know exactly what she was doing. I did like it when Madison was beating the crap out of her.
That was so intense.
It was really down on Ophelia during this episode.
Bashed her face in with the blunt end of the gun. Yeah. And then just like, what was it? Just like Rick Grimesinger just... literally, I mean, full mount, just like leaning over, just pummeling her head in. I mean, that was intense.
So the second hour opened with a flashback back to the, I think it was the season two finale that we talked about, where Ophelia was in the desert and then Jeremiah Otto finds her. He's like, hey, welcome to America. And so,
buenos dias.
Yeah, buenos dias. We see that this was actually a very short encounter with, he basically told her she wasn't welcome at his ranch and she should be on her way.
Yeah, what was he drunk? Oh, I mean, this is really rude. Like, first he's shooting at her feet, like, dance. Ha ha, isn't it funny? Like, what's he doing there? And then
it was a turn for the Jeremiah Otto character, because we saw him as sort of I thought he was kind of like a religious figure in the beginning but then he talked about how we don't want any brown people here, so you're not welcome.
Well, that's what it comes down to, right? I mean, this is where we learn definitively that this character is racist. I mean, that's clearly a factor, that he's just not treating Hispanics and, you know, first humans, as Walker calls it, first people. Like, he's just not treating them the same way he's treating the Clarks. I mean, it's very evident here.
Okay, now let's just rewind back, because I want to make sure that we're consistent here. But when Nick showed up with Luciana, I mean, what is the difference here? I mean, Ophelia is a United States citizen, correct?
Yeah, but he assumes that she's, you know, Mexican until she starts talking and has a perfect English accent or perfect American accent.
But why was the rule for Luciana that she was welcome to stay there? She was not keen on being around, but she seemed welcome. She left on her own.
But if you recall, she was not welcome. Nick had to pull a gun and put it at Jeremiah's face to get them to leave.
Because she was sick, though.
Was that the only reason?
It's
sick and brown, Rob.
I think it was that she was sick, if I recall, and that Nick got to, like, they were gonna like put her down because she was gonna use up the resources. I guess you could say, like, maybe
if her name was Lucy and she came in with, you know, curly blonde hair, would they have said all that, or would they have just handcuffed her and been done with everyone else?
I mean, but in Jeremiah's counseling of Nick, he never commented on, you know, Luciana's race or color ever again.
That's true. Well, maybe they didn't get quite that close. They got somewhat close. They started bonding over life, but maybe that's...
I felt like that this was a little bit that we, you know, really want to make Jeremiah out to be as bad of a guy as possible here, like, on this episode where we're going to kill him.
Add that addendum there at the back end. Yeah. I mean, potentially, sure. I think that was always kind of like a little bit of an underlying element here this season, right? Like the land misappropriation, this idea that like the Otto family has been mistreating natives, I mean, or locals, or just people of this land, people who were here before you were here. And whether that's the natives or, you know, Ophelia just crossing the border, it does seem to me that with certain people, based on the color of their skin, at least, you know, the appearance is that he's just like not giving them the benefit of the doubt that he gave Madison Clark.
Okay.
So, you know, Madison Clark does a lot of things where he's like, you're not the leader here. Like, you would think if somebody else did that, he would have a much more, you know, angry reaction. But Madison seems to get away with a lot. But then Ophelia just like leaves to die in the desert. I mean, it's not a one-to-one there.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what's going on with Nick in this episode. And he goes through a very traumatic experience where he gets a crazy haircut, Alex. what is the metaphor here for Nick decides to cut his own hair, cut his own precious locks, and then by the end of the episode ends up killing a man?
Yeah, I think right. I think it represents a little bit of like growing up for Nick. You know, I mean, there's a practicality in cutting the long hair in this world, right? I mean, we've seen it before. The long hair, it can get grabbed and get tangled in some, you know, some brush when you're out there. There's not a lot of benefit to long hair in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, harder to scalp you with very short hair.
That's true. Yeah, right. Walker's got a lot to hang on to there. Mm-hmm. There's just not a lot of upside. So I think this is just, again, speaks to, and we've seen it evolve, the Nick and Madison relationship, like you talked about, a second week in a row where Nick like takes a shot that Madison seemingly can't take or doesn't want to take or is hesitating to take. So it's just a continuance to me of the evolution from where we started. Nick completely dependent on Madison. He's a dope sick, you know, kind of, you know, sweaty loser, and he's not going anywhere and he's not figuring out this world. And I mean, now it really has, you know, it's in many ways come full circle where Madison is the one whose judgment we're questioning. And Madison is the one who's, you know, really kind of delving into these moral and ethical gray areas. And Nick is the one who's like seemingly like, you know, he stops, he sees what she's doing, and then he like cleans up the mess. Like Nick is kind of in a way, you know, come along further to a point where he's really figuring this whole thing out. It seems like
both Nick and Alicia struggle.
And surviving anthrax. That's pretty
yes,
sick. That's
yes.
awesome.
But the Madison's kids seem to have this moral quandary with what's going on, where Madison's worldview is the JSS, you know, just survive somehow. Whereas both of her kids end up being really sort of pulled in different, I guess, in the opposite direction. Ultimately, I guess, forcing her to turn on the Ottos, where I think that Madison would have went down swinging with the Ottos.
I think so, too. Yeah. And it speaks to, you know, she talks about it. I don't have the luxury of these feelings of feeling like, you know, this is morally yeah. reprehensible or whatever, like because I've been making decisions on like a higher level of need. Yeah. And you guys just haven't even had to really see that. And
listen,
I mean,
you
fair.
Millennial babies.
Yeah, right.
Like, I don't have time for feelings. I'm too busy taking care of business.
Yeah, my snowflakes over here just don't understand what I'm going through.
Right. I probably killed my first husband. My second husband is dead. My kids are feckless whiners. And that I got to take care of something.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, especially Alicia. Like, what are you doing, Alicia? You're just out there hooking up with Jake all day. Of course, you had the luxury of talking about whose side is right and stuff like that.
Right. But, Alicia, right, I mean, really, she does become a major sympathizer to what's going on with Walker.
Yeah. And then the one useful thing that she supposedly had, even that's not useful, where she's like, I know we can get leverage, and they take Walker's relic truck. But then it turns out that during her talk with Walker, she actually convinces him that like these relics don't matter. What matters is the future. So Alicia, like, I think is partly to blame in Walker, like making that realization as well, where those skulls mattered to him and now they don't. Mm-hmm. So you lost your leverage.
Yeah. What about everything with Ophelia, that it had been such a storyline? We had a whole Daniel Salazar flashback, but really, other than Mirage Salazar, we had no Salazar in the finale. Were you surprised that we didn't end up catching back up with him?
I was surprised. Yeah, I thought, you know, we would see Daniel to some degree. And I thought at least that, you know, well, not at least, but I kind of assumed that by the end of this, we would get everyone together, at least in, if not in one place, in like a similar location. So, yeah, I was surprised by that. We had, you know, brief appearance of Strand. But yeah, the only Salazar was that vision. And even in that vision, he's like, don't fall asleep. And what does she do? She falls asleep. So it wasn't a very helpful vision.
Yeah. So where do you think we end up getting Salazar back? I mean, he was just like at the hotel. He ended up losing Strand. So do we see him run into one of these two camps, or do we see that the water will be an issue? He returns to the reservoir, and that's how we end up meeting up with him. Does he have a third group back at the reservoir?
I think that's possible, right? I mean, because water came up again tonight. That's just so pivotal. You know, she's out there dying in the desert, and Walker's out there looking for water when he finds her. I mean, that's, you know, that's what he says. So, you know, water again, you know, I think, you know, in the regular Walking Dead, surely it's a really important thing that we kind of yada yada through a lot of times, I think, in part because maybe they find places that have it and then just they're not in Arizona or New Mexico or wherever we are now. I mean, it seems very clear that, like, you know, this land is so worth fighting for because there's water there. You know, there's large stretches of area where you're not going to find any, and that's something that can't be taken for granted anymore.
Yeah. All right. You mentioned what was going on with Strand in this episode, and to me, I wasn't sure where we were going because I thought that perhaps we were going to be seeing the end of Strand tonight.
Oh, no, I didn't think so. I mean, that would have really bummed me out, but I guess I've not prepared myself even for that possibility.
So we see him walking around and he ends up stumbling upon, lo and behold, Abigail.
Yeah, a little waterlogged.
Not quite as we left. Okay.
It.
So what happened with the Abigail? Like that, I thought it was parked. They got off it. But what happened? New people inhabited the Abigail?
Yeah, some jerk stole it.
But it looked like there was some party going on the Abigail, and then they all died.
Yeah, right. Like one or two people were wearing like cocktail attire. Maybe that was like nice clothes they found on the Abigail, and it was just like, oh, this is fresh.
They did like an Alicia and Chris and like, let's play dress up on the boat.
Yeah, well, I mean, when the only clothes on your back smell like, you know, all kinds of whatever, death and the water you had to traverse to get out to the Abigail and all that other stuff. I mean, you just throw on that nice cocktail dress that's waiting for you there.
They might have been guests at the wedding at the hotel and they left, ran out there and got on the Abigail. And so Strand is very happy. He's back on the Abigail. And it did seem as though he was just getting ready to off himself, right?
It looked like that might have been where this was going. I couldn't tell for sure if this was like a last hurrah or if this was just like a stopping point for him before he recollects himself and moves on. But yeah, I was really hoping for the latter.
you were hoping for what? That he was going to kill himself?
No. He's going to just like have some champagne and move on.
Yeah. Well, we see him that he's just like hanging out there getting all drunk. And he's playing with this CB radio, and he ends up talking to this Russian cosmonaut.
Yeah, that was crazy. Man, that really that's an element in this Walking Dead universe that I never thought we would tap into, is like, who's up in space right now?
Who's up in space, and there's a cosmonaut, and they're sort of like commiserating about the he's going to die up there. And Strand's response is, well, at least you got to go to space.
Right. He's really trying to hook him up with a silver lining, given that the guy's literally dying of exposure and no food.
Yeah.
Which is like the worst way you could go. At some point, wouldn't maybe just try to put on a spacesuit and swim for it.
Swim for it?
I mean,
where? Like evacuate the spaceship and try to like enter the Earth's atmosphere?
Yeah, go for it. What the hell?
I mean, that I don't know about swimming for. I don't know if he's on like the International Space Station or if he's in a ship. If he's in a ship, maybe you could go attempt to do the crash landing. If you're on the space station, I don't know what you can do. But you definitely will not make it. Like you cannot survive a fall to the Earth. In a, he's not in an Iron Man suit.
Yeah, I suppose you incinerate on reentry, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
I mean, if you're saying like,
try something. That's my point.
You know, an interesting way to off yourself. Okay, sure. That's an option.
Wasting away to starvation sounds terrible. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, I think at any point you could just open the hatch, right? I mean, that I think there's a million different ways to die in space. Nobody can hear you scream except for Strand on the CB radio. It was a little sad. They were kind of having their own conversations. Like they were kind of like talking about different things.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Right. It's like one guy's talking vodka, the other one's talking champagne.
Now, when Strand called him Chekhov, do we know, is this canon that is Strand a Star Trek fan?
I don't know. I mean, he was definitely quoting a lot of, famous philosophers and, it was like he finally found an intellectual, right? He hasn't talked to one since Thomas died. So he found somebody who appreciated his deep understanding of the literary world. So I think that was a special moment for him.
I do think that it should not be lost on us. There is some significance in the cosmonaut saying the world ended up going dark. So Strand is asking, is this just in North America? No, it's everywhere. So not that there was a lot of debate as to whether this was a localized phenomenon, the zombie apocalypse, but the entire Earth has been infected.
Yeah, now we know. And we also know that everyone assumed that Americans thought it would just happen to them because that's what Americans do.
That's what they do. No, it's happened all over the world, which sets
stupid
us up.
Americans.
Yes, for so many different Walking Dead spinoffs of The Walking Dead China, Walking Dead Australia.
Walking Dead Euro Disney.
Yes, yeah. Walking Dead everywhere. So that's something for the future for AMC.
Yeah. Can't wait to see, the Valley of the Kings, where like things are rising out of the sand and all this stuff.
Yeah, it'd be something.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, some sort of like Egypt Walking Dead, with you have like walkers and people got hiding out in pyramids.
It's already better than Tom Cruise's Mummy.
Okay. Wow. Damning with faint praise. So what was it about that conversation with the cosmonaut that you felt Strand was able to, okay, I'm going to move on, I'm going to burn the boat, and then I'm going to go back out into the world?
I think, that was one of those moments where, life kind of hits you. Like Strand is, lamenting his own circumstances. Like, oh, I'm stuck on this boat. I'm all by myself. I've got nothing. Everyone I care about's gone. And then, to be like reminded that there's like people who might have it worse. Like this guy who's like never going to see another face, and he's literally wasting away, and there's nothing he can do about it. Like that's one of those moments. And then to talk to him and find out that he's like an intellectual like Strand, and he's kind of like a kindred spirit on a lot of levels. I think that's empowering for a guy like Strand. That gives him like new energy to move forward with the knowledge that like culture and the world that I loved and everything I appreciated in the old life isn't necessarily gone. It doesn't all have to be gone. If I keep moving and keep looking, you never know what else might be out there, because who would have expected me to talk to this astronaut? So I think it's a little bit of a an awakening moment, which just reminds you that there are possibilities. Life has possibilities, death not so much.
So let me ask you the same question I asked you about Salazar. How do we get Strand back into the story in the second half of season 3?
Oh, he's going to put back on that Peruvian poncho and keep wandering north. And I think eventually he's going to find somebody we recognize.
He's going to run into the Otto camp.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he gets to that point in the fence where, there's a hole.
Mm-hmm. So I mean,
he's gonna find somebody.
Well, is he more likely to run into the Otto camp, run into the Walker camp, or head back to the reservoir?
I don't think he's going back to the reservoir. Things did not go well for him there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like probably he meets up with Madison and them. I feel like that probably makes the most sense. He was always more Team Clark than Team Salazar if things ever had to break down those lines.
I mean, it was weird that he was sort of had his own self-contained story over the course of this finale, where it's a little bit like, Better Call Saul, where we ended up just seeing, Strand in his own universe basically throughout this entire season.
Yeah, and it seems like he's really taking a page out of Nick's playbook. Like maybe he's not covering himself up in guts, but he is like shambling about with the corpses now. I mean, he's figured out how to navigate this world by himself without like having to run from the zombies. Like he's found the way to not draw their attention, which is big.
Okay. Let's start to look ahead into what's coming up. I think September 10th is the second half of the Fear the Walking Dead season. What are we doing at that point? Is it just about the Otto boys, the surviving Ottos, in terms of their quest to control the camp?
I kind of feel like there's going to be some new big antagonist that introduces itself. Someone that like dwarfs Walker, someone that like forces these two groups to you like all gather together in a huddle for safety or some kind of like, you know, we've seen some military elements or some other people. I mean, I, you know, there's still, you know, there's some, you know, warlord down in Tijuana that we've heard about. I mean, there's definitely some bigger players in this area, in this part of the world. We just haven't really seen them yet. Like, we know that, you know, we know from Negan and his people in the regular series that, you know, one type of person that seems to thrive in this world are like just big meaty goons, like guys like that. There seem to be more of those walking around than other types of people. And there's not a ton of those right in this vicinity. So especially now that the militia has had their anthrax hit, I mean, this is a kind of a vulnerable group. I feel like there's going to be some kind of outside outside danger that presents itself.
Do you think it's that, or do you feel like that Troy Otto continues to have to spiral out of control? Now, I don't know what necessarily, like, what forces he commands still. Like, is the militia still...
The guy Cooper's still alive. He's like the one guy.
I mean, is he not going to be so high on, you know, let's have peace with Walker, and then he wants to, like, lead his group to war with them?
That's a good thought. I mean, especially because we know that the thing that could really set him off is learning that it was Nick who killed Jeremiah. So I could see that where he's like, he's not doing so well. And then that news comes to light somehow. And then it really, you know, turns him into some kind of, you know, character we really have to worry about. That's definitely possible. And also, Daniel's going to show up at some point and be like, Ophelia, what happened to your face? And Madison just beat her senseless. So, you know, what's that going to mean?
You think that Daniel is going to, will he understand what's going on? I feel like there's a lot to catch him up on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I did think that it was interesting to see Ophelia in terms of, you know, does she have any of Daniel in her? And this was probably the most action that we got to see her engage in this episode here tonight. Although I really did hate her when she came back and was the spy. And she was talking about how I'm not brainwashed. I don't have Stockholm syndrome. It's like, well, why are you invested in what's going on with this battle between Jeremiah and just because Jeremiah was he was offensive?
I mean, he left her for dead. Like, not only was he offensive, but she straight up was about to die. I mean,
I guess, but you know what? I feel like that she wasn't necessarily like, you know what? F that guy. I hate that guy. Good. He should be dead. He deserves to die. She was more along the lines of like, no, this isn't right. I felt like that she got very much caught up in the land battle.
Yeah, and then this also like repays a life debt to Walker, to Taka, right? Like that guy saves her when she was dying of exposure in the desert, and he nursed her back to health, and he gave her water, and he gave her a bath for her sun blisters and all this stuff. So, I mean, yeah, she felt like she was indebted to this guy, and here's an opportunity for me to pay that debt.
You know, the line that really made me not love Ophelia was where Madison is driving back with her, and, you know, Madison's like, does it mean anything to you that, you know, Nick is going to die? And, you know, like, what's your problem? And that's when she's talking about, like, she's brainwashed. That's what they did to her people. And she's like, I thought I was your people. And Ophelia says, no, the nation is my family. Like, come on, stop it.
Well, let's see how bad they want you back. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I mean, how long has she been with them for?
Yeah, I don't know. It can't be that long. But, you know, I mean, you know, she has had a very stark contrast in experiences with these people from Madison, right? I mean, Madison joined up with the Ottos. They took her in. And then her first exposure to Walker and his people were a pile of dead people that were supposed to be their people. Ophelia was left for dead by Jeremiah. And then, you know, Walker and his people took her in and nursed. I mean, like, it's just the complete opposite. Like, from her perspective, these are the good guys and those are the bad guys. And it just kind of emphasizes that there is no clear cut answer in this world that, you know, the more you learn about some of these people, the more you might find yourself in the position that, Alicia's ultimately in, where she's like, wait, we're on the wrong side. Wait, hang on a minute.
Yeah, but I do think that the show also, like, very conveniently didn't mention, like, that Walker did butcher a number of people from the Otto camp in like grotesque fashion, including when they like, cut that guy's skull open and let a bird eat his brain to death.
Yeah, but wasn't that Phil? So doesn't he have like the, you can always have the excuse of like, I had a blood feud against these four guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, now that the four are off the table,
I guess, but Walker did kill some innocent people. Oh, yeah. Like you could say, oh, well, they weren't innocent because they were in the Otto militia. But, you know, let's not make it out that, you know, Walker was this great guy who was just, you know, ripped off by Otto the whole time.
Poor Travis.
Yeah. Poor
Travis. But hey, I mean,
he killed Travis too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, his sniper named Crazy Dog. Apparently, that was on him. But apparently, Walker has some useful resources.
Yeah, I mean, he's working on these guys Air Force. In, yeah.
He's got like two of the greatest mechanics from the Iraq War. That's an insane resource. And then, like a legit sniper that can pick off a helicopter at that kind of range, whose name is Crazy Dog. I want a sniper named Crazy Dog in my, retinue. That's amazing.
All right. So do you feel like that we have an alliance with this group and then there is
a truce?
And then you think that there we end up with some future big bad that's coming. You think that's where it goes rather than we have a full on like air assault against the Walker camp?
Well, I like your idea too, right? There's going to be conflict coming and it's either external or internal for sure. But I don't think it's going to be, reverting to Walker and his nation versus the Ottos again. I think either, like you talked about, Troy is going to become this kind of negative force that can't be contained and at a point has to be dealt with. Or, like I said, I think, there's going to be some extra party that introduces itself, whether it's, some of these warlords from down in Mexico or whether it's, some new element from the States. I don't know, but I feel like we're going one way or the other.
Okay. All right. Alex, anything else about the first half of Fear the Walking Dead season 3?
Oh, man. I really enjoyed it. I thought
best half season they've done, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not even close for me. I mean, I thought it was really cool. I mean, some real like character growth, too. It didn't just feel like episodes, right? Like from the start of this half season to the end, we can actually like track some of these characters in terms of, narrative growth, in terms of like the decisions they were forced to make and the way it, adjusted their moral compass ever so slightly. Like that's what people always appreciated about The Walking Dead. Like it's a character driven show. You and Josh used to always say that on the recaps. It's not just, a crazy zombie movie. I mean, it was always billed as such, but it's really these character moments and the evolution of these individuals and how these like just intense world moments now kind of shape who they become going forward. And I think we've really seen great examples of that this season with, Madison really coming into her own and really, seemingly going from the newcomer at the camp to now the de facto leader in such a short time. I mean, Nick has really evolved in a lot of ways and has, become a practical guy where, you could see episode one or episode two, Nick, season one, Nick, not sticking with his mom, like saying like, hey, no, like, and blowing up her secret, because he's just not, the moral issue is more important, but he's, driven by protecting the family now. I mean, we've seen a lot of things that have adjusted a lot of the main characters and how they approach things. I think it'll be interesting to see how like all this hardship affects Strand too. I mean, Strand is going through probably the hardest time in his life. This is a guy who always seemed to come out on top and things aren't going his way right now. So there's a lot of evolution taking place here with the characters.
All right, let's talk about the most valuable player and least valuable player of the half season. I think that let's just take Madison off the board because I think that she's far and away the show's central figure. She had a great half season. Kim Dickens, I think, is incredible on this show. And I think that she is sort of the glue that's holding this whole thing together. She had a couple of really great, I guess I'd call them monologues in this episode, particularly the one where she talked about how she ended up killing her father. She's always incredible. So I'm going to just put her off to the side as MVP.
And we didn't even talk about the scene where she walks Ophelia back into the diner. It's like, oh, I'm ready to die. Like that was intense.
She's great. I mean, she really is, the most consistent performer all through this show. But let's
starting to wonder if her maiden name is Grimes, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, that came up on the Fear the Talking Dead, which she was on. All right, so MVP and LVP. I think for me, in terms of just the show overall, who brought the most to the table, I think I have to give it posthumously. Am I saying that correctly?
Posthumously,
yeah. Whatever. I will give it to the late, great Jeremiah Otto.
Nice. I like that call. Yeah, Dayton Cali, he really brought a lot to this show. It was like a breath of fresh air to have this character, I think, in a lot of ways. He was very, very deep, very complicated, very drunk. It was good.
Yeah, but it was worth it.
I'm going to go with Nick.
Nick?
I think Nick has come a long way. You know, this is the guy who we were like, what are you doing, man? You're just like bouncing around Mexico, covering yourself in blood, just kind of doing not much. Are you still looking to steal pills? Like, what are you even doing anymore last season? And now he's really come a long way. I mean, he's able to put down Gretchen. He's able to put down Jeremiah. He's cut his hair. He means business. He survived anthrax. That's insane. Can we just talk about that again? Who does that? I mean, did he build up a tolerance with all his dope sickness back in the day? Does that like help with anthrax? I have no idea, but somehow he survived. Others didn't.
Yeah, well, they gave him the antibiotics.
Did not. Yeah. So Nick is in it for the long haul. He's a tough dude.
He's in it to win it. All right. Who's the LVP for you, Alex?
Ooh.
David Baltazar says Cliff Curtis for LVP. No, Travis Manawa in his 1.1 episodes this season. He really did. He was a bold fighter. He was a warrior.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah,
remember how he beat up like. Pit? Yeah, remember he beat up like 50 walkers all of a sudden.
Yeah, they
like,
just
went like
yeah.
Rambo.
They're all just standing there like watching him eating popcorn for like a feature length movie of him just doing work. That was amazing.
Yeah. Kathy Wallace says that Nick for most improved. I would give that. I'd give Nick that. I don't think he's the
like
MVP.
Yeah.
So all right. But in terms of the least valuable player this season.
Yeah. It's a tough call. I mean, you almost like I could see Troy because most of what Troy actually did set us back. So really, I mean, Troy is not helping, but Troy may prove pivotal at some point down the road. So I don't necessarily want to write him off. Probably Ophelia.
Wow.
She did nothing until the finale. And then in the finale, she just like dropped anthrax in the coffee. Like, I don't like that move. That's such coward's warfare. Like, I hate that. That's not cool. It's dirty pool. It really is. I'm not a fan of that kind of tactic.
For me, least valuable player this half season, I have to go with Alicia. She did not contribute really anything to the narrative. I mean, she was on the helicopter when it went down, so she was at least witness to Travis getting murdered.
Contributed to Bible study.
Yeah, she went to the Bible study. She got drunk and high with the other kids. She had this romance where she's really like head over heels for this Jake Otto. And it really was not like a strategic decision. It was just like, they're like, hey, he's hot. I'm DTF. And that's really all it was. There was no sort of there in terms of like, I guess it like things got complicated where you saw where Madison was like, hey, we need to sort of like keep this a business relationship with the Ottos. And it wasn't like that she was trying to, you know, be this character who was going to be a manipulative figure. And then she chased him back to the compound with the walker. She ended up being like sympathetic to the walker side of things. She got pissed off when people had to come and rescue her. So I'll say she was the least valuable player. David Baltazar says Luciana for least valuable player. She bailed.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. But we don't even remember her as a character, so I think that's telling.
Okay.
Alicia's a good pick. And I mean, you know, I think it remains to be seen. Is she still as attracted to Jake now that he has like the beginnings of
she'll like the scar.
Like some scars I agree, but like face scars like that. I don't know.
That's badass.
All right. Bang a ring.
Yeah. So Alex, any other thoughts about this half season?
Probably, but nothing comes to mind. you know, I think, you know, a lot of the focus here was on land, right? And the idea of like who does land belong
Everybody
to?
Everybody owns land.
If anyone, and misappropriation. And like there was a lot of that going on this season. And I thought it was an interesting story to tell in this universe.
About land, that finders keepers.
Yeah, the dirt is red.
You paid me beer money for this land, and now it's mine.
Yeah, beer money, right? Yeah, and even that, right? Like that was like it just speaks to, you know, he's definitely a racist, this guy. Like, oh, is that what it was? Like, maybe that's what it was, but you know, to assume that that's what it was, like, I think that just speaks to his character and kind of how he views these natives that they can't even like use the resources that they're given correctly and stuff like that. So I think that speaks again to why he won't go, like, because oh, they'll just waste the water and they'll just, this land is in good hands now, and they'll let it go to whatever, which probably not true. They probably know what they're doing. But yeah, I mean, the courts told him one thing and he's not going to change just because the courts don't exist anymore.
Kathy Wallace wants to know, is it just me or does poor Gretchen look like Sam from Alexandria? Did you think of that?
Maybe a little bit, though. I mean, they're both like freckles and round in the face and short hair. So I guess I could see it a little bit.
Okay. David has an interesting question. Is Fear the Walking Dead better than the regular Walking Dead? I thought that the Walking Dead had a pretty good season 7. You know, I was more down on it in season 6, although Fear the Walking Dead is on the rise. What would you have better right now?
Man, I'm really enjoying both right now. I think still the original, but again, I'm biased. You know, I've really gotten into the comics and I'm really excited to see like how we adapt some of the stories there. So it's different for me, you know, where it's like that's drawing from source material that I've come to appreciate. This I'm enjoying, but on a whole nother level, because I just have no idea where we're ever going. There's no source material to pull from.
I think it depends more on your Negan mileage, where yes, if you are a Negan fan like I am, then mm-hmm. I think you're into it. But if you've had enough Negan, then I could see it.
I love Negan. I mean, and I think he's great in the comics. I mean, like IGN ranked him as, you know, he's one of the top 100 comic book villains of all time. So, I mean, even before the show came along, like when Negan was being portrayed in the comics, people were already really gravitating toward that character.
Okay. All right. Alex Kidwell, great work here. You can follow Alex Kidwell on Twitter at Alex Kidwell. And of course, we have so much coming up with the Road to Westeros podcast series. Also over the weekend, Josh Wigler and Antonio Mazzaro got to talk about Spider-Man, the new movie. Did you go see that, Alex?
I did. I really liked it. Yeah, I think expectations are a factor because I didn't necessarily know if I was going to like it or not. I just went in to see how it was, but really enjoyed it. I mean, for me, it was better than any of the Spider-Man movies that have been made since at least the first two.
You know, I didn't see the movie, but I really liked the podcast. I liked the new take on Josh and Antonio. I feel like that those characters that you knew so well, Josh and Antonio, from the previous, you know, versions of that podcast that they had done through the leftovers
cinematic universe.
I thought that this was a really fun reboot of those two characters, and I was very interested to see where they were going. There was not as much damseling going on. I like that. I like that. We didn't get the whole backstory of like, oh, how did we meet? Oh, let's talk about that. That they just went right in, and I like that.
Yeah, all these upstate New York stories.
Yes,
sure.
Yes, they skipped all that. All right, so thank you guys so much for checking this out. Again, if you are watching this and you weren't joining us live, please let us know what you think about the format. We certainly can do more of this stuff in the future if you are enjoying it, and we're going to give it a shot this Sunday night the same way when we're live. I believe it will be myself, Stephen Fishback, and Josh Wigler on this upcoming Sunday night to talk about the first episode of Game of Thrones Season 7. All that and more on our Post Show Recaps podcast feed. Go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. And please be sure to check out our all new website at postshowrecaps.com. Alex, anything else?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Everybody, looking forward to hearing what you have to say in the feedback. And we'll be back in September with more Fear the Walking Dead. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.